On the record. On News Talk.
With Pinergy. Supplying energy with insight to forward-thinking Irish businesses.
Now, we've already been talking a lot about COVID-19 and what the threat that it poses to our health service on the programme today. But let's talk a little bit around the solutions which are coming. Because as we know, although the rollout has been slower than a lot of people would like, there is a vaccine programme now underway. But how exactly will it roll out? How long will it take everyone to finally be given that vaccine? And what is progress like right now? Well, I'm delighted to say we are joined on the line by Professor Karina Butler, who is chair of the National Immunisation Advisory Committee. She's a member of NEFIT and she was a member of that high-level task force on COVID-19 vaccination. Karina, thank you very much for joining us this lunchtime on the Record. I suppose I might start with a reasonably obvious question, which is, at this point, do we know exactly how many people have actually received a COVID-19 vaccine in Ireland?
I don't actually have that number, Gavin. I don't know. And I'm sure, given the way it's been rolled out in a number of different sites, and they were working through yesterday and even quite late yesterday evening, judging by some of the calls I got, I'm sure nobody has the exact number as to how many people received the vaccine. But all I know, it has been going really well this week in all of the hospital sites, and they've been really working very hard to get it rolled out there.
Do you even have a ballpark figure of how many people might have received it so far?
I don't have one in my head, Gavin. I'm sorry. HSE probably has that, but I don't have a ballpark figure in my head.
Okay, so. No, that's fair enough, because I know that it's not necessarily your responsibility to look over the nuts and bolts of the whole rollout. But I suppose...
I do believe that they are working on having a vaccine immunization tracker, such as, for example, in the US, where you have the numbers updated that people can see, because of course everybody has interest in that. Mm. So I think that will be good when it comes. I was looking at the US one, and it was interesting to see just this morning they're up to over 6 million. I think that gives us great confidence and comfort in terms of not hearing any particular adverse events that are now unexpected rolling out from that, but it's going well. And I know that everything is happening here to speed the roll up. And there have been so many different ways that already steps have been taken on that. For example, when we started at the very beginning, we thought we had to hold back 50% of the supply to give everyone their second dose of vaccine in 15 days. Then as an extra supply of vaccine came in, that was thought, well, we could afford to bring that down to a week's buffer. And now as the vaccine supplies have been secured, they've been able to even cut back that even further, and that has facilitated rollout.
So it's now the case that we don't have to keep aside 50% of each batch, that we now are confident that we're getting more, that we can hand out pretty much everything that we get.
That's right. We have the confidence that we can hand out more. So I think there's a small contingency being kept, obviously in case supplies didn't get in for bad weather or for whatever reasons or technical reasons, as you could imagine. But the other thing, when we started off, we were getting... or thought we could get 5 doses of vaccine from each vial. Now it's pretty commonplace, not every time, but pretty commonplace to be able to get 6 doses of vaccine from every vial. And so that's enabled the numbers of people going through as well. And of course, places have stepped up to the mark. At this stage, it has been primarily the healthcare facilities, hospitals, and beginning in the nursing homes. And next week, there's going to be the number of nursing homes involved goes up very, very significantly. So that already I heard it, you know, said, I think it was Paul Reid was saying that we're going to get through the nursing homes and have all that completed more quickly than had been anticipated. Mm. And all of that is great news. So it's very dynamic, and we're getting information all the time to see what other ways can we facilitate the rollout and get it to more people as information emerges. I mean, I don't think anything like this has ever been done before, where literally you're analysing the information in real time as it comes in, trying to translate that into operational so quickly. Mm. And so that's a challenge to all of us, but we have to rise to that challenge.
There are a couple of other timetable issues that I want to discuss, but just because you happen to mention the idea that we can now get 6 shots out of each vial of the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine, I know there are a lot of people who speculate around the idea of leaving longer than 3 weeks between doses so that you might be able to get more out of it, but that there are some question marks about whether that has been approved for regulatory purposes or whether it's been, you know, medically scrutinised or whatever. Are we confident that getting 6 doses out of each vial instead of 5 is the right thing?
Yes, we are confident about that. And the EMA has also altered their recommendations in terms of that as well. And the FDA has altered theirs in terms of really what we're concentrating on is how many complete doses. It's a 0.3 mil dose you can get from a vial that has been properly diluted. So once you have the right volume in there, the actual critical volume would allow for up to 7 doses to be obtained. But, you know, there are issues around the syringes and how much what we call dead space were in there. You won't always get that from every vial, but it is possible you could get up to 7 doses from a vial given certain syringes and certain needles. So it's not that we would expect people to get 7 doses from a vial. Most people will be able to get 6 doses. You will always be able to get 5 doses.
But it means that having received what we thought would be 80,000 doses, it means that if you can get 6 instead of 5, that means in practice that we've received, I guess, somewhere between 90 and 95,000 doses.
Yeah, you couldn't do it just quite as mathematically as that, because as I said, it's variable how many doses, you know, in the sense it's operator dependent as well, whether you would just get the 5 doses. So you can't just give it an extra 20%, but we can hope that it translates into more than the baseline assumption.
Okay. I know that there are a lot of moving parts, and obviously it depends on other candidates being approved and then rolled out, and we don't quite know how logistically that's going to work. But a lot of people would like to know if there is really a timetable for when the vast majority of Irish society or when each individual cohort might themselves expect a vaccine.
Well, what we know at the moment, and this really is at the more the implementation and the logistical end of it and the numbers of population. So not my prime focus, I'd have to say. But we know that it was hoped that all healthcare workers and all residents of long-stay institutions would be vaccinated. The original target was by the end of February. That now is being shortened. And we also know that it's already begun to reach out in some areas into getting some of the community GPs have been able to come into some of those hubs. So it's changing all the time. So I can't give you an end date. I mean, there have been various end dates proposed depending on vaccine supply. Mainly, that's the main constraint is vaccine supply, what we get when vaccines are licensed. But hopefully by the summer, we will have a bulk of the population immunized. But depending on supply, that could stretch out later than that. I personally can't tell you when each cohort might get vaccinated.
And that's fair enough, because as I said, there are a lot of moving parts. But I guess a lot of people are really concerned that because there isn't a tangible time, that it does allow for slippage, because there's no political commitment, for example, to have everyone done by September. And then if that timetable were to slip, then there's no promise broken. And you can understand why people are a little
totally
bit unhappy.
I can totally understand, Gavin. I can totally understand. But unfortunately, it really is the reality of the situation, because those people who are making those projections have no firm commitment. There are so many different moving parts. For example, okay, with the Pfizer-BioNTech, that's great. We know what the vaccine that is coming there. And in fact, it now looks like we're going to get more, so that might accelerate it. But for example, with the AstraZeneca vaccine that we're all waiting to hear, well, we're still waiting to hear. That has now been submitted. The process begun to submit for the final approval. And we're hopeful that there won't be any problems found. I'd be very hopeful of that. And then that would be approved. I think the schedule now is for the end of this month, and that will do it. But the other, you know, there are other vaccines in the play here. For example, there is the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, which is kind of like the AstraZeneca vaccine, but it's a one-dose shot. So that would be a big addition if that would come through, that you could get people completely immunized with one dose.
So that's single dose, and it's regular refrigeration as well, isn't it? It doesn't require any deep freeze.
Exactly. It's like
so
the AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, the trials haven't been completed on that yet, and that will be submitted for approval. So they're all the unpredictables that we can't say. So, yes, I suppose you could go into a logarithm, but in a way that's setting up false expectations. So which is better? To set up false expectations that might then fall and then everybody's feeling even more frustrated, or to try and explain to people why it is the way it is, and to all I can say to them is really everybody is trying hard to look at what can be done as safely, as quickly as possible to get everyone immunized. And as I've said before, you know, no one, I'm a pediatrician, I'm a doctor, we don't want to leave anyone behind. We really don't.
Have we looked at the idea of receiving some batches and having them distributed of some of those other candidates like Moderna or like the Oxford AstraZeneca before they were approved? Because it seems that some of the countries that have got a bit of a head start, the United States is one, you mentioned 6 million. Everyone is looking at Israel in jealousy at how quickly they're getting through things. But it seems one of the things they did was that before there was regulatory approval, they had them all distributed anyway, so that as soon as the regulators gave the thumbs up, they were ready to start jabbing. And it doesn't seem like we have taken the same approach.
Now,
I wonder why that is.
Now, Gammon, think back on Ireland's history in vaccination. And I think everyone's prime concern was that whatever we did it safely, that vaccines had been thoroughly studied, and that we knew that what we were doing was the right thing for people. You could ask us, would we do that? Are we going to take that additional risk? When I was starting to do these kind of interviews, the question everyone was asking me was, isn't this too fast? Isn't it too rushed? Are you sure what you're doing? So I think the appropriate way is to wait to make sure that the data has been adequately evaluated to make sure that we're doing the right thing and that we know how to use the vaccine. In terms of the AstraZeneca vaccine, there has been a lot of data put out, absolutely. And in fact, it's been quite difficult to tease out that data because of some of the problems with the initial trials. Mm. It does look as if there are no safety concerns with the vaccine, but there were some concerns about, was it going to be effective enough and what populations? I think all of that is going to pan out really well. I'm really optimistic in looking at it, but I would certainly like the confidence of knowing that those who are really experienced at looking at those things, and the regulators don't just look at the final results, they look at how the vaccine is processed, at all the steps in the manufacture, in the processing, that everything is safe and appropriate for rolling it out. So that is why it is appropriate to wait to get the approval. Yes, the MHRA are an excellent body and able to do that for their community and balancing their risks. But I think it is appropriate that we do as we have done. I know people say, compare us to Israel, but you know what? We're not Israel. Israel is more or less a large history of militarization and operational activities. They had an IT structure, personal identifications, everything in place that could facilitate it. And Israel also ran into problems because they ran into a problem this week where, in fact, they didn't have the supply to continue. We will be at this situation, essentially, we're at the situation where supply is the only thing that's going to constrain the delivery of the vaccines. And that's the way we want it to be. Okay. If that falls down, then we need to do something.
You mentioned in passing there, Karina, the IT structure. I know that it was observed by the expert task force led by Breen McGrath that at the time that we didn't have that kind of IT structure, that kind of oversight. Do we have that up and running now?
The IT structure is not quite where it should be yet, absolutely. And that's an extra challenge for everyone on the ground doing it. Not my area. I understand people are working on it. But, you know, this is one of the problems that had been set us. It would be so much easier if we all had national health numbers, unique identifiers, be it a PPS or something else. As you know, for years, people have fought against that. Mm-hmm. But actually, it is something that we really need within our system to facilitate not only this, but the efficient transfer of medical information. It's in everyone's best interest to have it.
I know that you aren't necessarily responsible for the nuts and bolts of how individual facilities are dealt with and where they come in the queue, but I know that there was a lot of attention paid this week to the fact that some staff at a hospital in Mallow were expecting to receive their doses this week, that they had all of their personnel on standby ready to start receiving them and to start rolling it out to their colleagues. And then at the last minute, they were told that it wasn't going to arrive. And it's been suggested to me that the clock starts ticking, particularly on this Pfizer candidate, where as soon as you take it out of the deep freeze, you have 120 hours to administer it before it sort of goes stale, for want of a better word. And that clock starts ticking as soon as it leaves City West. And that does put hospitals outside Dublin at a bit of a disadvantage, because if you have a truck that's doing multiple stops from Dublin on the way down to Cork or whatever, that the time that they have to play with by the time it reaches their facility is a little less. And I wonder, has any thought been given to, instead of just having Dublin as the only source of deep freezers, that maybe there could be a little more attention paid to having a more geographical spread so that the hospitals had more time to play with?
Gavin, you're right in what you said at the beginning. I really am involved in the nuts and bolts of the distribution. And I'm sure, as in all things, there might be glitches. Even in the UK, wasn't it Matt Hancock who was sitting in a GP surgery all set up for vaccine to be delivered, and it didn't get delivered on that particular day. Though I have heard it said, and again, I do say I'm outside this, I'm not the expert in the logistics or the distribution, but in fact, the fact that there was a single hub made it much more, much easier in terms of the interactions with Pfizer and getting the deliveries and potentially getting that extra delivery that we got early on, because there was a single distribution center, whereas in other countries where there were multiple distribution centers, that became more problematic. But I'm not an expert on logistics.
Okay, no, that's fair enough, but at least to know that there is a logic behind why there is only one, at least that's helpful to know, at least anyway. At what point will there be full interactions with the GP groups and the pharmacist groups? Because obviously, especially when it comes to AstraZeneca or Johnson & Johnson, they will have a big part to play, but they don't seem to have been brought into the tent yet.
Well, again, that is for the HSE end of it. I'm at the National Immunization Advisory Group. My understanding is that is ongoing as we speak, because obviously they're a critical part of the workforce going forward in terms of vaccinators. The training materials are up online. People can do that and to get their certificate, because there are technicalities around the handling of this vaccine that people need to be familiar with. And I suppose this beginning rollout has given a lot of local information that is able to be shared with the training groups and everything. So, and I know from personal contact, from the contacts I've had from different GPs, absolutely putting their hands up and, look, we're ready to go. We want to be part of this. So, you know, the enthusiasm from everybody, and even around the hospitals, you've seen a diversity of people getting up out there and putting up their hands and ready to vaccinate. We will not be short of willingness of people to help and to participate in this. I'm sure of that.
Final question for you, and I know that you can't divulge anything that goes on behind closed doors at NPHET before a formal letter is sent to the Minister for Health in each case, but there is some speculation in today's papers that Leaving Cert pupils might be pushed up the queue so that it would be safer for them to all assemble in a school hall or wherever it would be in time for the physical state exams in June. Has any thought been given to that, or would you counsel it as a good idea?
What I would say is, at the moment, if you're talking about vaccination or vaccination queue, at the moment, what we know about these vaccines is they prevent disease, and they prevent bad outcomes, serious illness from COVID. So our focus has to be on targeting the vaccine to those who are most likely to get that, and then those who, for whatever reason, can't avoid their risk exposures. That is the basic ethical framework on which we decide the prioritization list. If things around the vaccines, if knowledge or information around them changes, such that, for example, we learned that they were excellent at actually stopping transmission from one person to another, then that would might potentially change your prioritization to those who are most likely to transmit, rather than those who themselves are most likely to suffer bad consequences.
But at this point, the priority would have to be those who get sicker, and younger adults don't fall into that cohort.
That is the ethical framework along which we would look at it. There have been changes in prioritization. As we've learned about those kind of risks, that is kept always under review if more information comes out. And that might change as we go through the pandemic, and we're seeing, we've seen such large numbers come into our hospitals now. Of course, we have to always review that data to see who is ending up there, what is happening on the ground, and that will inform those kind of prioritization lists. But can I just say one thing? Mm-hmm. The important thing, you know, vaccination is great, and I'm an advocate of vaccine for many years. Vaccination is great. But in this particular situation, vaccination is not going to stop a person getting infected tomorrow. But all of us that have it within our own capacity, if we're not infected today, to prevent ourselves getting that infection. Because we know that physical distancing, hand hygiene, those things work. If I don't see you, Gavin, you're in a different place, I can't give it to you. If I was sitting here with COVID and you were there, you are perfectly safe from me because I can't spread it to you and you can't spread it to me. Mm-hmm. But if I'm talking to you, close to you, then I could. even if I didn't have the symptoms, and if the virus is in my system and I don't know it, I can unwittingly give it to you. So we all have to act as if we are unwittingly carrying this virus, and if we could have the potential to spread it on to someone else. And we can stop that today. You know, we can do our level best. There are always exceptional circumstances, but each of us can do that.
I think it's an important point, I think, to finish on, and absolutely worth just underlining the importance of that very sensible message as well. We will leave it there. Thank you very much for your time this lunchtime. Very much appreciate your time, because I know that you're very busy with all of this. That's Professor Carina Butler, who is chair of the National Immunisation Advisory Committee and a member of NEFIT.